Hello, 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 hello. When you grew up in Ireland in the 70s and 80s, you believed or you imagined that your grandparents knew everybody in the world. Those were the times when people saluted one another on the streets. Didn't matter. You walked past somebody on the street, didn't matter. If you never saw them before, you said hello. I used to walk into town with my grandfather from St. John's Park in Waterford and around the town. And he would go around the town like this, hello, hello, hello. And I grew up imagining that he knew everybody in the world. Those were the days. I was mindful of this walking around the local area this morning. I was mindful of it, looking at people. You walk past people on the streets now, on the footpaths, on the pavements, and it's like they'll do anything to avoid eye contact or even saying hello. I always say hello because I was brought up like that. Never walk past anybody on the street without saying, how are you? Hello. Increasingly, they look at you like you're crazy. What the fuck is wrong with this guy? Hello. There you are. Hello. It makes me laugh every morning. I turn this on and I see so many of you sitting there waiting, expectantly. Have you nothing better to do than watch this fucking garbage? It genuinely makes me laugh. Oh, God. Anyway, I'm not insulting you at all. I'm glad you're here. I'm just wondering, you know, what do you expect out of this nonsense, you know? Good morning. Because this is ladies' night. Ladies' night. Got two brilliant women on the radio show later on. Maria Heller will make her first appearance of 2020. But I'm also delighted that Miriam Hennane will be on the programme live from California, from Los Angeles. And she's a journalist and an activist. She made a wonderful documentary about bees, which she wrote and produced. And it was voiced by Ellen Page, who's a brilliant actress. And Miriam Hennane is really interesting. She's vivacious, she's funny, and she's got a lot of things to say that I think you'll enjoy listening to. So she'll be on the show later on. That's why I said it's ladies' night. Who remembers when nightclubs were free to women on Thursday nights? I remember, because I DJed in many a nightclub back in my day. And it just made me laugh that nightclubs were free to women on Thursdays, which is counterproductive. Because from the local rural surrounding areas, every fucking farmer decked out in dungarees and roll-up dungarees, rolled up on his shins and check shirts, came to the nightclubs early and paid their fiver. And there was no fucking room then after 10 o'clock for the women who could get in for free. It always amused me that. Ladies' night was Thursdays, but there were far more men than women in these clubs by 10:30 or 11 o'clock. Ladies' night, free for women. Do you remember that? I don't think it's a thing anymore, is it? For women to get free access to nightclubs on Thursdays. God be with the days, I say. Excuse me. Ladies' night. Right. Keith is in Anshan. How you doing, Keith? Okay. I believe the trigger warning duo, that is Graham and Hayden, or Hayden and Graham, you can't favour one or the other, you see. You've got to take it in turns to say Hayden and Graham and Graham and Hayden. Two lads I'm very, very fond of. And they're fundraising to replace equipment that was stolen from the building they operate from. In North Manchester. And I think they've gotten about a 1,500 quid of the 4,000 they want. And 4,000 is a very modest target, because the equipment is worth far more than that. But they're going to be very frugal in spending the money and buying equipment. They're going to be buying equipment maybe third or fourth hand, but they're very clever. Hayden has worked in films and television in his past, and Graham is a bit of a genius when it comes to all things technical. So I'm delighted. GoFundMe.com is where you'll find them, and GoFundMe gives every penny donated to the campaign managers. They don't take a cut. What GoFundMe does is it asks you to tip them a little sum for their efforts. Anyway, I'm glad that the lads' campaign is going along really well. And I'm glad that some of you who do listen to the radio show, even though you mightn't agree with some of the things that the lads say, I'm glad that you think it's important that we have independent outlets that we can go to. And, you know, if not in the next few weeks, if not in the next couple of months, sometime this year, I'm going to make another series of the silly Richie Allen television show. I might do 8 or 10 episodes of that with Hayden, and they're keen to do that. And they're going to do that, and they're going to do it for me, and they're not going to charge me a penny. And make, you know, they make it look fantastic. It'll be brilliant production values. And, you know, there you are. A lot of time for the lads. Martin says, Wednesday was 50p night. 50p to get in and 50p for a drink. You could get drunk on a fiver. God be with the days. I remember when you could get 5 or 6 pints for a tenner in Waterford. I used to go down to the Showboat Snooker Club and Pub. And I used to go to Prendeville's Fish and Chips. I could get 5 or 6 pints and a big massive cod and chips for under a tenner. Back in the day. Yeah. Those were good days. Those were damn good days. Although, to be honest with you, alcohol is very cheap these days in pubs. You know, I don't advocate Wetherspoons pubs. As a rule, I don't advocate them, recommend them. But extraordinarily cheap in Wetherspoons now. But even in around Salford, even around Fallowfield, where I was previously based, even in Didsbury, East Didsbury, you could find pubs where you could get a decent pint of lager for 2.40, 2.50. I mean, Jesus. It's cheaper now. If you take into consideration inflation over the years, I think alcohol is as cheap now as it ever was in pubs, that is. Because pubs have been decimated, of course, for obvious reasons. We won't get into that now. We've done it to death. ITN star is forced to quit in race row. This came up on the radio show last night. Alastair Stewart has been reading the news for 4 decades. ITN, Independent Television News, Independent Television. ITN for ITV. And he was in an argument or a debate with somebody on Twitter. It turned out to be a black gentleman. And Alastair Stewart, in the midst of arguing with him and trying to point out in a very highbrow way that his opponent in the argument, the black man, was ignorant and was happy to vocalise his ignorance on Twitter. I have a bit of sympathy with Stewart's complaint that social media has given rise to a lot of very loud people who opine on things they know fuck all about. And they're proud of their ignorance. Yeah. I've survived as long as I have by accepting that there are many, 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 many things I know nothing about. And those things are things I don't talk about because I don't want to look like a feckin' idiot. I might be a feckin' idiot and you might think I am, and I am sometimes, but if I don't know anything about anything, I'm not going to speak about it with an air of authority. But increasingly, we live in this world where facts don't matter, narcissism reigns, and morons on Twitter will, with a big old megaphone, metaphorically, scream about things that they know nothing about. And I think this was the point Stewart is trying to make in his argument with the black gentleman, but you can't be using, when you're talking to black people, you shouldn't be using the term apes. Now, I'm not saying that Stewart didn't do this by, you know, just by the course, by the fact that he was just arguing with the guy and the quote came to his mind. Maybe. I can't speak for Alastair Stewart, and you know I'm no virtue signaller. And you know that I take stick from some of my black listeners because I constantly criticise people who play the race card all the time. But in this current climate, you know, maybe Stewart should be a bit more clever. Anyway, let's have a look at a story inside the Mail. Here it is. He would have thought he was being clever. Stewart's friends have weighed in behind him and said that his use of the Shakespearean quote was just his way of trying to be a bit hoity-toity, a bit, you know, to come across as a bit educated, that he was above the man he was arguing with, not that he wanted to compare the man to an ape. So there you are. But it's been there's been too much. There have been too many examples in recent times of people falling foul of the Twitterati, making mistakes. Danny Baker. I don't think Danny Baker made a mistake when he posted that picture of the well-dressed couple with the chimp when Meghan and Harry gave birth to their baby, baby Archie. I don't think for a minute that because Meghan is from, you know, apparently a mixed race background, that Danny Baker was suggesting the child was a monkey because his mother has African heritage. I don't believe it. Baker was destroyed because of it. Excuse me. So you would have thought that guys like Stewart would be aware of it. Was Stewart even aware he was arguing with a black guy? Don't know. But it's interesting. Right? So there's the guy Martin Shapland after the quote, after the Stewart quote. And if anything annoys me about Martin, it's that Martin didn't ask Alistair Stewart. There's some of the quote there. You can see some of the quote there. But man, proud man, dressed in a little brief authority, most ignorant of what he's most assured. Okay? His glassy essence like an angry ape. Right? Okay. It seems clear to me that Stewart is making that point that I made earlier on. You know, you think you know everything. You're proclaiming knowledge about something, about that which you know sod all. Is why he used that particular quote. But angry ape, like an angry ape. If I was Martin Shapland, now black people might say, you could never know, Baldy Gammon, Baldy Gammon. You could never know what it's like to be a black man. Of course. But I'm going to try and imagine, because I don't have thin skin. I don't. I never have had. You can say whatever you want about me and my family and anything. The only thing you can't do is put my address on the internet. Then I'll fucking kill you. But I've got thin skin. I would have tweeted back Alistair and said, Alistair, I'm guessing you don't mean to compare me to an ape. At which point Stewart might have went, no, of course not. I'm basically saying that you're a loud-mouthed, ignorant fucker, opining on something which you know nothing about. But the black gentleman, Martin Shapland, immediately took that he was being referred to as an ape. Anyway, Stewart has stepped down. He's gone. That's him finished. And I believe Douglas Murray in the Spectator has been writing about this. Let me see if I can bring that up. I will read your comments on this, by the way. Jean Ann, who's very interested in this story. That's my Jean Ann. Says, but aren't we all descended from apes? That's right, if you believe Darwin. If you believe Darwinism. Are you saying you don't, BBG? I haven't a clue where we came from. I have no idea, to be honest. And you know, I have no idea. I've not got the Douglas Murray. I'm badly prepared this morning. Not because I've been lazy. I'm not. I'm a bit mindset. I've not slept a lot. I'm still getting over this virus. You can hear it in my voice. Coughing a lot. So, speaking of coughing. So I didn't quite upload the Douglas Murray piece in the Spectator. Anyway, it matters not. We can move on from that story. Okay? What do you think yourself? 2-6 says, I can see exactly what Stewart is saying. It's a comment on anger, authority and ignorance. Which is the way I would take it, 2-6. But again, black people might say, oh, it's easy for you to take it. Richie, Stewart is not stupid. He can see that he's arguing with a black man. And he knows the quote contains his glassy essence like an angry ape, Richie. That's what a black person might say. We can't always be wrong, Richie, a black person might say to me. We can't always be wrong. There are some times when guys are having a little dig, like Stuart there. So really, it's up to you what you make of it. Paul says people are trying to win arguments they are losing. Chucking recourse to ceiling offended, says Paul. Sir Hubert says, big baldy Irish gammon, he's the Roy Keane of alternative media. Who's that? I've not been following that conversation. Is there another big baldy gammon? Tell me and I'll have to have him killed. There's only one. Steve O'Neill says, well, that's a conversation I'm not privy to. Millie says, Stuart is nearing retirement age. He's 67. So could he have been given a bonus to do this? And then promote the race war the establishment so love? A bit like Lawrence Fox, says Millie. That's a proper conspiracy theory there, Millie. I won't dismiss it completely out of hand. But I don't think so. It might have been a bit clumsy by Stuart. Does Stuart deserve the benefit of the doubt? Do people deserve the benefit of the doubt? Douglas Murray made the point in his article in The Spectator this morning that Stuart has been working at the ITV, ITN studios for decades. He's worked with many a black man and black woman, and he's worked with many people of colour. Could Stuart have been hiding his deep-rooted, seated racism for years? You know, surely he's not racist, and he was just making the point that this guy's very loud and ignorant. I don't know. These are the things that mainstream television news love. They love culture wars, race wars. They love them. So maybe Millie has a point. I don't know. So that's Alastair Stewart then. Household name. On these islands. Indeed. Indeed. I'm looking good today, actually. Do you think I'm looking good today? I took the old straight razor over the baldy dome there. Like a bit of that. Like a bit of romper stomper. There are those in the mainstream media who believe I'm some sort of right-wing bigot, so give them what they want. Shave the old head there. I'm going to buy a pair of bobber boots and a bomber jacket, and I'm going to get a Union Jack tattooed on the back of my neck and a bulldog tattooed on the front of my neck. I am in my hairy arse. Of course not. What's in the Star? ITV legend quits after ape jibe. Lovely. Telegraph. HS2 should go ahead, Javid tells Johnson. This is the Chancellor, Sajid Javid. This HS2 thing is going to cost over 100 billion. It's the biggest red herring there's ever been. And we're going to leave that there, HS2. Just leave it alone for today. Financial Times, probably HS2. Yes, future clear as Javid throws support behind £88 billion rail project. £88 billion is conservative. It's going to be way, way in excess of £100 billion. And it's unnecessary. Totally unnecessary. No need for it. We're not fucking big enough. This country doesn't fucking need a train that goes 500 miles an hour. It doesn't. We're not big enough. They need them in China. Okay? They need them in other parts of the world. India. Imagine here's a bit of racism now. Can you imagine 500 mile an hour trains in India with all those Indians hanging off the fucking sides of it and the top of it? You racist, baldy, gammon bastard. I love those videos, those travel shows when you see all the Indians on the trains. On the top of the train, sitting on the front of it, obscuring the view of the driver, hanging off the back of it, hanging on the sides of it. Brilliant. But those trains only travel at about 20 miles an hour. You racist fucker. Hot on the heels of slanty-eyed bastards. Chancellor's green light for HS2 Daily Express. Right, let's leave that there. Guardian. Evacuated Britons face 2 weeks in quarantine. Yeah, they're getting the army involved. Mind control. Programming. Changing. Thinking. You know, inducing us to be okay with the military getting involved and escorting people who return from a so-called quarantine zone, escorting them to a new quarantine when they arrive home, getting the army involved. Why not? Jesus, you have people terrified now. There are people terrified. You can, if you go to Twitter, people expressing real fear about catching this virus. It's working, the programming. It's working beautifully. Let's get the military involved. You've arrived in from China, and there are men wearing face masks and a military uniform asking you to step this way, please. I have great empathy for the great researchers that I've been interviewing now since 2009. 11 years now I've been doing the independent media route. I spent many years before that, of course, in commercial and mainstream media. 11 years now I've been doing this, or thereabouts, and I have great feelings now for the men and women whom were scorned, laughed at, ridiculed, mocked, because they were predicting things like this. There you are. Were you in China? Where are you? Come this way. Going to put you into prison for 2 weeks. Effectively. Fuck your rights. You're not going to infect us. You can't go home. Fucking crazy, right? Like SARS, like Zika, like swine flu. It's bollocks. It's utter bollocks. Beeb's brutal call. This is making a lot of the papers today. BBC wants to make savings of about £80 million a year. And it's going to make cuts to some of its more well-known programmes. Newsnight's going to have cuts. I don't know. The papers are speculating that some high-profile presenters will lose their jobs. But I'm not sure. To make cuts. The BBC pleading poverty. At a time when the government is allegedly pursuing the idea that they might decriminalise non-payment of the licence fee, which is compulsory at the moment here in the UK, if you have a telly. And non-payment of it and refusing to pay the fine thereafter can result in a custodial sentence. Imagine, we live in a democracy. You've had guys on television all week talking about the Chinese regime, man. They found a gentleman in a flat in Nottingham, starved to death. Think the man's name. If I was so horrified by this story. Let me think. Errol Graham. And I remember his name because there was a boxer one time called Errol the Bomber Graham. So this is a gentleman was found in Nottingham in a flat, starved to death. Literally. I normally hate people who say literally. Starved to death. His benefits were cut for no fucking reason. The guy had depression issues and he had problems. And he was left all alone in his flat. And when bailiffs came to break down the fucking flat door because he hadn't paid his rent, they found him dead. And he'd been dead for some time. And all they found in his presses, in his larder, in his pantry, was a couple of fucking tins of food that were years out of date. I'm not going to shout. I'm not going to rant. Because it would appear to be contrived if I did. But I had a little cry to myself yesterday when I read that story. I had a little cry. Imagine you're talking about Iran and you're talking about China and about human rights. And a man with psychological, with genuine mental health problems is thrown to the fucking streets, basically, by the government. The benefits that keep him alive barely are stopped. He's punished by a system that's been farmed out to private companies. A system that's designed to find reasons to stop people's vital state assistance. The guy goes and locks himself in his apartment. He's got nobody and he fucking starves to death. And you've got the balls to talk about human rights abuses in other countries. You've got the fucking cojones to talk about China and Iran and Syria. Errol Graham, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you Google the story. Bailiffs bust down the front door to throw him out on the fucking street. They found him dead. Where did we stop? We did the Guardian, did we? Did we do the Metro? We did. Here's the Mirror. Mentioned this yesterday. The son of Sandra, the maid murdered by, allegedly murdered by Lord Lucan, or Arnold Schwarzenegger, believes that he found Lord Lucan in Australia, living with a bunch of Buddhists. The Scotland Yard have said, yes, we are going to investigate it. But there's an article in the Times today which is completely dismissing it. Lucan's son, is it? Lord Lucan's son? Thanks for the comments, by the way. Jean-Anne mentions I, Daniel Blake, which is a really, really good film by Ken Loach. And I asked a number of people after that film came out, people who, A, have had to apply for benefits to survive, but I also talked to a couple of people who worked in food banks. And I asked them, how accurate a depiction of the current setup is Loach's film, I, Daniel Blake? And to a man and a woman, they said, it is bang on. This is the reality. People are being starved to death. And it is a program. It is an agenda. It isn't as a result of some bad decisions made by some idiotic people. It is deliberate. It is by design. How can you be anything other than a failed state when women who are working, by the way, working in low paid jobs, 0 hours contracts, fucking jobs, and they have to go to a food bank to get some pasta and some sauce to feed their children. How could you be anything other than a failed state in 2020 when a man is carried out on a stretcher with a sheet covering his face, whose benefits were stopped in Nottingham? A man who never committed a crime, a man who never did any fucking wrong, a man with genuine mental health problems, goes into his flat, closes the door, and starves to fucking death. And you talk about fucking countries like China. Yeah. Here's the eye paper. Northern Rail again. Let's get rid of that fucking Northern Rail. What's the sun got today? Jesus wept. A story about dissension amongst the ranks of the ITV This Morning programme presenters. Who gives a fuck? Apparently, the people who present This Morning don't like each other very much. And that's the front page on The Scum today. That's news for you. Imagine that. How could you fucking sleep at night if you're the editor of The Sun? Huh? This is what you're presenting to people as news. That should be front page news today, should it not? Earl Graham in Nottingham. British man found dead, starved to death because the state decided that he didn't deserve any money anymore. Front page news. How can this happen in Britain in 2020? No, we'll talk about Philip Schofield and fucking Ruth, whatever her name is, and Eamon fucking Holmes. Yeah. Yeah, that's important. Yeah, we need to deal with that today. Crazy fucking shit, huh? Crazy shit. I'm worried about dropping out again. This second thing has been dropping out at times. Apologies. I've lost all the messages that have come before. Let's look inside the papers then. What did John Rappaport say? The great journalist. The other night on the Richie Allen radio show, he said they're rushing to get the coronavirus vaccine out. They want it out at the speed of light, Richie, he said, because they will, having terrified the living Jesus out of people, they will queue up now to get their coronavirus vaccine as they did back in the day in the United States over swine flu. They'll all queue up, roll up them fucking sleeves there and get the injection. Of course, John is right. They're working round the clock to get the coronavirus vaccine out. There's the BBC. Scientists racing to develop a vaccine. Of course they are. We've been here many times before, says the Beeb, ironically. The next step is, of course, when you say we've been here many times before, it's almost incumbent on you to say, and none of those viruses ever amounted to more than a hill of beans. No. The world has faced the brakes of Ebola, Zika, another coronavirus called MERS, and the virus simply known as 2019 NCOV. It's already infected thousands of people, says the Beeb, and killed more than 100 in a planet of 7 billion. But unlike in many previous outbreaks where vaccines to protect people have taken years to develop, that's a lie, by the way, because they had the swine flu virus vaccine out very, very quickly, didn't they? Didn't take years. It was almost like they had one ready to go. Yeah. Scientists have been developing a vaccine within hours of the virus being identified. Unprecedented speed. Marvellous. Nothing to see here, please disperse. Nothing to see here, please disperse. And I found this very interesting. Not recently, but in a number of programs going back about 3 years, I dealt with, what's it called? Is it Miracle Mineral Supplement? Is it MMS? Now, I know my pal Hayden Hewitt and the Trigger Warning Gang, they've taken the royal piss, out of MMS on many an occasion. It's bleach, says Hayden. And taking any quantity of bleach, ingesting it into your body, can't be a good thing. What do you think, you big baldy gammon? I don't know. I've interviewed people who swear by MMS, and you will remember me interviewing them and constantly being the devil's advocate and putting to them that there are people who say it's dangerous. I've done my job right. And I know there are people who have been on my program to talk about health matters and vaccines and stuff. They believe that MMS is a genuine remedy that can be useful in treating a number of different things. I've never been a fence sitter even, as you know. I don't know. But it's in the papers today, not just one paper. Let's have a look at the Star. Coronavirus conspiracy theorists claim drinking bleach can cure deadly disease. So they've linked Miracle Mineral Solution, MMS, to QAnon. Now, I've always believed that QAnon is monumental bollocks. How do I sum up the central theory of the QAnon movement? Well, they believe that Donald Trump is some sort of hero embedded deep behind enemy lines in the deep state, and that Donald is trying to bring the deep state to its knees as some sort of agent in the Oval Office, that he's a good guy. It's fucking horseshit, right? I think that much is obvious. So, well, it's more than obvious. It doesn't bear repeating, really. So you have the Star today linking QAnon with Miracle Mineral Solution, or MMS, which QAnon apparently has claimed to be a cure for AIDS and for autism. Doctors and healthcare professionals warn against drinking bleach due to the toxic chemicals inside, says the Star. And QAnon influencer, Chief Police 2, I don't know who any of these people are, urged his 17,800 Twitter followers to use 20-20-20 spray, which is an MMS mix, in a bid to protect themselves against coronavirus. And he tweeted as such. Okay. Go watch this video where you can learn to put 20-20-20 spray to make it. I use it to protect my family. It kills viruses quick. He linked to a website that has directions for how to take the bleach, which told users spraying this mixture in your mouth and swishing it around and swallowing it. The Star goes on to say that bleach is dangerous and the main ingredient in MMS, sodium chloride, can also cause acute kidney failure if consumed. Now, those who promote MMS, they take issue with the characterization of MMS as bleach. They say that there isn't bleach in it as such, that the sodium chloride quantity is so minuscule in the mix that it can't be and shouldn't be declared to be, it shouldn't be categorized as bleach, they say. And I've been very fair with people who've talked about MMS in the past. I told them that, you know, I've said to them, look, your opponents say it's crazy. There's no proof it cures anything. I've done my job. But I believe everybody should have an airing. And I don't know. Maybe we need to talk about it again on the programme in the near future, maybe. What do you think? I know some of my guests and some of my friends, I say friends, but contacts and people whom I talk to on Twitter, they believe that MMS has, dare I say, healing properties. Dare I say that it can be used to treat certain things. And, you know, I don't disrespect people who think things like that. I've never had anything to do with MMS. I don't know what it looks like. I've never seen it, the product, but I know that it's been pretty controversial. I did interview a woman from Ireland called Fiona something or other, and I thought she was a bit hysterical. She has children with autism and was on television in Ireland complaining about MMS. And I brought her on the Richie Allen radio show three or so years ago, and she had a bit of a meltdown on the show because I was just being the devil's advocate. I was saying, but hang on a second, Fiona. It's not just raw bleach people are taking here. You know, let's be honest about it. Okay, sodium chloride, you know, chemical, whatever, but they're not taking raw bleach here, you know? So it's an interesting one. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you think about Miracle Mineral Solution. We might get into it on the programme again in the near future. It would be nice to get two people on, somebody who thinks that it's dangerous and somebody who thinks that it isn't. It would make my job infinitely more easy to do. I wouldn't have to go and spend hours then looking at all the different ingredients of Miracle Mineral Solution, isolate each ingredient individually, and then look at what that individual ingredient, what effect that has on the human body, because it takes fucking hours. Oh yeah. The Queen and Prince Charles have had crisis talks about Andrew. Do we kill him? Do we drop a couple of pills in his cornflakes, Charles? I don't know, mummy. I just don't know. Well, we can't fucking cut the brakes in his Jaguar, Charlie. I know, mummy. What do we fucking do? I know. What about falling off his horse? Maybe. No, that's been done to death as well. I don't know. But no, they're having talks about his future in public life. We learned yesterday that he has denied the allegations made by lawyers representing the victims. He has denied their claims that he isn't offering himself to be questioned or that he isn't cooperating. I am, he said. But that remains to be seen. The Queen there and her jug-eared son. Lovely. What have we got? There's that BBC story in the Mail that high-profile presenters, maybe, will be axed as the Beeb tries to make savings of £80 million. £80 million! The Beeb. Yeah, I believe the BBC should do what ITV and Channel 4 does. It should have ads Don't scream. Don't scream. Calm down, dear. Calm down, dear. You might say, but Richie, the reason, going back years, why the BBC doesn't take on advertising is so that the BBC can be impartial. It's very difficult for a broadcaster to be impartial if corporations are advertising their wares on BBC programmes. Yes, you have a fucking point. RTE, Radio Telefisheren, carries ads. Most state broadcasters carry ads. It is laughable to claim that the BBC is impartial. It is ridiculously otherwise. It is laughably not impartial. It is biased to its fucking core. We know this, so it doesn't matter if the BBC has 4 3-minute ad breaks an hour filled with ads for I Can't Believe It's Not Fucking Butter, for children's toys, for gambling companies. I couldn't give a shit. But I'm not paying for its propaganda. Ever. And I don't tell other people what to do because, again, it's a criminal offence to watch the BBC and not to pay for it. So I don't tell people you should do what I do. No, I don't. You do whatever you want. I don't have anything to do with it, so I don't pay for it. So they're going to get rid of people. If you're old enough, you'll remember back in the 90s, one of the best days in broadcasting history, when the BBC got rid of all of those old fucking smashy and nicey presenters. Do you remember? Charity. Of course, I'm doing a gig for charity. Dave Lee Travis and Noel Edmonds were fucked out the door. Blood on the Carpets was a documentary made about it. The greatest thing ever to happen to radio. I was a Radio 1 listener because I was a young man. And listening to Noel Edmonds and Tony Blackburn and Dave Lee Travis, give me a fucking break. They were all fired in one day because they were fucking useless. Was brilliant. Oh, cliches reigned. They were so bad. They were dreadful. And their firing changed the landscape of radio and radio training and basic operating standards for presenters. Because I remember when I started at WLR, shortly after these guys were all fired, part of the training was referencing why these guys were fired, because they were fucking dreadful. Dreadful. In-house jokes that the listener didn't get. Constantly fucking talking themselves up for their charity work. Constantly placing themselves alongside their celebrity guests. You know, completely removed from the audience. They were dreadful. They were fired. It was good. Are we going to get blood on the carpets at the BBC again? Probably not. Anyway. Flag-waging Nigel was cut off in farewell speech as European Parliament ratifies Brexit deal. The European Union, the Parliament voted to ratify the Brexit deal. It has been ratified, of course, through the House of Commons and the House of Lords here. So tomorrow night at 11 o'clock, we, because I live here and I pay taxes this month. Bastards! Has to be done. Yeah, I can't even say it without crying. Right, so we're supposed to leave tomorrow at 11. We're not going to leave tomorrow at 11. Farage made his farewell speech yesterday. And a woman called Mairead McGuinness. Is she from Fine Gael? Is she Jean Anne? Is she from Fine Gael? Fine Gael? I have no idea. She cut off Nigel in his prime during his farewell speech. Here it is here.
That's it. It's all over. Finish.
If you disobey the rules, you get cut off.
I know you're going to miss us. I know you want to ban our national flags, but we're going to wave you goodbye. And we'll look forward in the future to working with you as sovereign.
If you disobey the rules, you get cut off. Could we please remove the flags? Mr. Farage, could we remove the flags, please?
That's it, it's all over. Finished.
is gone.
Could I please ask for quiet? I'm really... Please sit down, resume your seats, put your flags away, you're leaving, and take them with you if you are leaving now.
Marvellous. Mairead McGuinness there with a face like a bag of spanners. With a face like a bulldog chewing a wasp. I don't know which fucking party she represents. Has anybody told me? Fine Gael, is it? Fine Gael? John Parsons is on there. Are you supposed to be hammering and banging down your shed down the back of the garden, John? Get back to fucking work. Don't be watching this nonsense. That's John Parsons. Macora in Salford. The other side of Salford. I live in the Riviera. I live in the Beverly Hills side of Salford. John lives amongst, well, the gangsters. And the thieves. I live in Beverly Hills. Beachfront property I live in. Here in Salford. Beachfront. There you are. A face like a slapped arse, says Chris. With your face. God be with Vic Reeves. What else have I got for you today? I know, I know. Wind it up, wind it up, wind it up, you're saying. Wind it up, it's fucking shit today. I know it's shit. I know. I don't think I have anything else. Oh, I do. Oh, for fuck's sake, I do. Ah, oh. Maria Heller, by the way. Speaking of gangsters. She's not a gangster. She grew up amongst them. In New York. Amazing. And Maryam Hennain will be on the radio show today. Ladies' Night. It's going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. The song Ladies' Night. You're going to be cursing me. Around about 2:30, you'll be getting out of the car. And you'll be singing, Ladies' Night. He's that fucking baldy bastard, huh? If there's one sure way to drive... She's downstairs. She's working from home today to drive the future Mrs. Allen mad. Like proper mad. I'm not joking. This is not a joke. Like where she'll properly fall out with me and not speak to me. Is if I start singing My Lovely Horse from Father Ted. She goes fucking mad. Caroline's got a bit of tinnitus. She's lived with it for years. And she's good with it. She doesn't let it get her down very much. Very good like that. And I don't know if the tinnitus is related to me singing My Lovely Horse, but she goes fucking mad. And she says to me later on, for like a day and a half, the fucking thing goes around in my head. I can get into people's heads. My lovely, lovely horse, my lovely horse, running round the fields. Where are you going with your fetlocks blowing in the wind? It was the... Irish Eurovision Song Contest entry for 1996, Father Ted Crilly and Father Dougal Maguire. And it won. It didn't win. It didn't win. It won Song for Ireland. And it won. It got no points in the actual Eurovision itself. Oh, she goes bananas. Oh, fucking screams like proper French meltdown. I fucking told you. Hey! Oh, hey! Do you ever see the French losing their heads? Fucking hilarious. Hey, ho, ah! There you are. Hope she's not watching this. Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, this is it. Hang on, hang on. Because this is Ladies' Night. This is in The Guardian. Awards are being given out by Stonewall. Stonewall is a charity for LGBTQ plus people. Charity. I know. In this day and age, gays have taken over the world. Gays and Jews. We've gotten it all wrong. Those people who blame the Jews for everything, you've gotten it totally fucking wrong. It's not the Jews, it's Jews and gays. They meet in the Antarctic. There's a cavern 700 meters below the ice. And if you go down there, there's a load of gays and a load of Jews. And they're secretly running everything. Stonewall has announced the most inclusive places for gays, lesbians, bisexuals, queers, binaries, non-binaries, transgender men, transgender women, God knows what else. They've announced their list. And it's Newcastle City Council. Why I, man? I can't do any fucking accent. Where's Jean Anne when you need her? Jean Anne's a dab hand at the accents. Then again, she better be fucking Shakespearean National Theatre actress. Newcastle City Council is doing right by the gays. Sainsbury's and Channel 4 also make the top 100 list for inclusivity. These are good places to work for gay people and lesbians and trans and everybody else. GlaxoSmithKline is in there as well. Ah, brilliant. There is no staff at the Richie Allen radio show. There isn't any. But I'd almost be compelled, I think, if I ever had the funding to employ a full-time producer and also a full-time editor, I'd get the queerest fuckers that ever lived. You know, absolute screaming queens just for the fucking hell of it. To see, could I get on the list? Stonewall next year. Kay Burley announces next year on Sky News. Stonewall has announced the most inclusive places to work in the UK. The Richie Allen Show! Fucking hell. What they don't mention in the article is how they measure the businesses in order to rank them. So what are they doing? Presumably they've got tampons in the men's fucking toilets maybe and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know. Big fucking baldy gammon. I have no idea what they're doing. I don't know what the fuck, you know. Maybe they have the Brokeback Mountain soundtrack playing constantly 24/7 in the foyer of Newcastle City Council. Maybe. Don't know. I haven't a clue. Right, I'm out of here. Did I mention who's coming on later on the radio show? I did. excuse me. Maria Heller, hour one, and Miriam Hinnane in hour two. She's, well, we know what Maria is like. She's fantastic. Miriam has never been on before. Vivacious. Very, very, very funny. And very sharp. A very sharp analyst, I think. So it'll be nice to welcome her to the programme as well. Right. Hey, John Rorty, who I mention John from time to time, who sends me nice tweets on Twitter. John is a gay man. John's been married for 3 or 4 decades, John. I like that. I like monogamy, John. I got a lot of stick years ago for saying that gays are less likely to be monogamous. And maybe I deserved it, maybe. You shouldn't generalise. But my gay friends and the greatest influence on me, my boss who passed away a couple of years ago, I've mentioned him many times, Billy was gay, and they had an open relationship, and Billy used to say to me, yeah, we don't mythologize sex as much as you straight folks do. We don't put as much importance on sex. I love my man, said Billy. We've been together for years. I couldn't be without him. Lovely. But he said, we don't get so hung up on sex and all of that. And I disagree. There's only one woman for me. You know? And if there were some peculiarities, if there was some fetishistic thing that I took an interest in, if I suddenly felt an overwhelming desire to wear diapers and wear a baby bonnet and speak in baby speak while getting slapped on the fucking arse by a fetching woman to get my rocks off, I would actually tell the future Mrs. Allen. I've had many rows over the years with guys who are married, who have affairs or who go to prostitutes. Many rows. I said, what are you not getting at home? I've actually not phrased it like that. I'm like, why are you doing that? And sometimes they'll say, well, you know, there are things that I'm into. Well, tell your fucking wife, you know. I'm sure she'll accommodate you. Unless it's really fucking extreme, you know. But wearing a pair of diapers or nappies, getting a slap on the fucking arse, she might laugh her fucking arse off when you tell her. But she also might do it. Right. So I'm a one-woman man. Because I'm old-fashioned, me. I'm an old fucking fashioned man. Gary Cooper, John Wayne. Jesus wept. Wind it up, you're saying. Wind it up. See you at 5 o'clock then, usual channels. Until then, have a good Thursday. Bye now.